The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome. And we have a guest here today, or that I don't know. So I'm Gil. Jivako. Hi. Welcome. Nice to have you. Yeah, and so you come from Abhayagiri?
I've been there for the last 6 months. Yeah.
Last 6 months, and otherwise, where you spent your time?
Based in Thailand for a while in Australia, and doing the USA tour.
Oh, I see. He's based in Thailand and Australia, and he's touring the USA. And I suspect it means a lot of Dharma centers.
Yeah, it's turned
into that. Well, welcome here, and I understand you're staying at the IRC right now?
Right.
You're adopted. Great. Well, welcome. So I wanted to talk a little bit about generosity. And it's such a fundamental virtue and practice of Buddhism. Some people would say it's kind of the most fundamental in the sense of being kind of the entry teachings or the entry practice that's often taught traditionally. And my own experience of years of Buddhist practice and around Buddhism has been one of ever deepening appreciation and valuing of generosity as a state, as a quality of heart, as an action in the world, as a practice to engage in for spiritual growth, and as a wonderful source of motivation for our involvement with the world and with others. And this last thing, that generosity can be a force of motivation, has been very important for me because of the very strong tendency of many people that I encounter, including myself, some earlier in my life, of inheriting or being trained in a lot of shoulds. I should do certain things. I should be a certain way. And one of those is I should be good in the world. I should be, you know, socially engaged. I should. We have an obligation to help the world or help other people. And this idea of the language of obligation is a little bit oppressive. But the language of generosity, that we have the opportunity, we have the option to be motivated by generosity for the people around us, for the world around us, and to act from that generosity, that inspires me. That's kind of uplifting. It's a very different feeling to want to be generous than to be obligated to be generous. In fact, I think that we can't be obligated to be generous. Then whatever we do, it's not generous. I think that the definition of generosity is to offer what is not expected, offer what is not obligated. If we offer something or make an exchange or something that is expected, the generous part is if we did more than was expected. So that there's something of the unexpected, unobligatory aspect of generosity. And to be motivated to respond to the suffering of the world from our compassion and our generosity creates a very different field, very different feel, very different relationship with the world around us. And this is something I've seen repeatedly over my whole adult life that I've been involved in Buddhism. The tremendous sense of goodwill and generosity and gratitude that comes from all the giving that goes on, the freely offered giving that I've experienced. Represents this for me, but there was one moment in my practice in Thailand that was particularly kind of a wake-up call for me about generosity and the freedom of giving and the non-obligatory nature of it and the joy that that can bring. And that was, I was doing my first Vipassana retreat in a temple outside of Bangkok, And it was a long retreat. I was sitting there about 10 weeks that I was practicing in a little kuti, a little hut, on the edge of the monastery, on stilts, kind of above a swamp. When we lived in this hut, there was a little one room. I don't know how big it was. Maybe it was 6 by 8. It was pretty small, a little hut. And then it was up on stilts, and there was a little porch. You come out the door, and the porch was probably big enough probably for me to sit on like this. And then there were maybe 3 or 4 steps going down to these wooden planks that were spread across the ground where there was sometimes quite swampy. And I think maybe, I don't know how many planks, maybe 3 or 4 of these long planks all in a row to the dry part of the land. And I was not a monastic at that time, so I did not go out in the morning alms rounds that the monastics do. The monks and nuns in Thailand, they don't eat usually unless they go out for alms. It means they have to go out with a bowl and the local people put food in it. They come back. In this particular monastery, they'd come back with the food to the monastery, deliver it to the kitchen, and the kitchen would spread it out and make this kind of buffet the best they could for it. And then everyone who's in the monastery would eat from that buffet, so not just the monastics. So that was my source of my meal every day. But I was not a monastic, so I did not go out there for the gather of this food. I stayed in my hut to meditate. And one day, I would sit and meditate, and I'd finish my meditation early in the morning, and I got up and I opened the door to look out of the, and there I looked down, and there on the little porch, on the edge of the edge of the porch next to the steps, was some cookies and an apple. So I saw that. I figured it was a gift. Someone had left it there for me because there was no one else anywhere around in the swamp. And then my eyes went up, and in the distance, not so far away, I don't know, 40 feet away, 50 feet away, I saw the back of a monk who was walking on those planks going back to the dry part of the land. And so I assumed that he had been the one who gave me these gifts. But what blew me away, what kind of was a wake-up call for me, given my, you know, my uncivilized training or something, was that he was doing it anonymously. He did not know I was going to be opening the door just at that moment and seeing him walk off. He was leaving it there without any expectation that I would know that he left it there, without any expectation that I would thank him for it or there'd be any kind of exchange, or it was just freely given. And it might seem like a simple thing, and maybe many of you have had that kind of generosity offered to you, or maybe you've done such a thing where you offered something with no expectation and for anything, just anonymously. But for me, it was, in that context, it was very inspiring about the nature of the possibility of giving, the possibility of being generous in this free, open-handed way without anything in return. And that's what I've seen over and over again that's been emphasized in my Buddhist training, is the potential we have to offer, to give freely, meaning without expectation or obligation, without any expectation or need for something in return, to be given something in return, a thank you or praise or some, you know, if I give you a cookie, you'll give me an apple or something. Just kind of here, give. To be living in this environment where this is often the case has slowly over the years changed my heart, where I now really appreciate and value and delight in this possibility of just, you know, just open-handedly giving and freely giving, and it feels so good. It feels so nourishing. It feels so freeing for the heart to live that way. Because the opposite could be to to be held back, to be tight, to be afraid, to be miserly, to hold in, to not to give. And even when you're not, I'm not miserly or holding in, there's kind of like, if I'm not in a generous spirit, there's something which is not quite open in the heart. Somehow the heart is kind of like not as vibrantly alive or free as when I've discovered this, when I'm living from this idea of freely given, free generosity. The word that we often use here in the West for this is dana, D-A-N-A, and it literally means the gift, but it's often interpreted to mean generosity, and this idea of a freely given gift that comes from this place in the heart that is so free and so open. And what I found, I think it was significant that I had this experience of the apple and the cookies halfway through a 10-week retreat. So I've been sitting in silence and doing sitting and walking meditation for a few weeks by that time. So the heart was already quite open, and I knew a kind of sense of inner peace and at-homeness and openness, receptivity, that I had never had before. And so it was into that open-heartedness that this little maybe just little kind of act of generosity this man did touched me so deeply. It kind of resonated with inner sense of goodness or inner sense of freedom, inner sense of well-being and love, which I was feeling. And I said, oh, it was kind of like a recognition. Yes. Yes. Like, yes, this is a way to live. This is a great thing to do it this way. One of the teachings that I've heard from Buddhism, it's said in different ways, is when someone's asked when or what should you give, the answer is give what brings you joy. Give what inspires you. And there's, I don't know exactly if it's from the suttas, but one kind of little saying about generosity that I don't know if it has to be true, but it's an interesting kind of perspective, slogan to carry in your mind. And that is, the giver's joy should be greater than the recipient's. Now, isn't that interesting? The giver's joy, so who's benefiting from the giving? Is it, here, let me help you and benefit you. Rather, here, I'm will you take this so I can feel good? something more like, here, and just feel this inspiration. And because it just feels kind of this natural expression of goodness. And so this source of joy. The Buddha did say that one should give without harming oneself or harming others. And so that's goes along with that, so that, again, that we don't give out of obligation in such a way that we give away the things that make our life more difficult. We're not expected to self-sacrifice ourselves in ways that are, harm us. And also it's possible to harm others in how we give. And so there has to be some wisdom in the giving, the wisdom of the consequences and about what's beneficial and what's harmful. So the idea of having joy, delight, inspiration in the giving, and doing such a way that doesn't harm ourselves. So there are times when it feels that our desire to be generous, our wish to be generous, our acts of generosity, feels like just the flowing of an open, free, relaxed, peaceful heart. And it just feels like the natural thing to do. And sometimes it feels so natural that it's talked about that there's no sense of being a giver, no sense of being a receiver of the gift. It's just like, it's almost like if you take, if I have this glass of water and I give it from my right hand to my left hand, is there a giver or a receiver? Am I the receiver of the gift? It doesn't make sense to talk about a giver and receiver when I pass it back and forth between my hands. So sometimes when generosity is done so kind of naturally or easily or from a very settled, peaceful place, it comes in a way that we don't do it in reference to me, myself, and mine. Reference to what I'm the one who's doing it, or even that that's the person who's receiving it. There's a desire and inspiration to give. Someone has a need for something, perhaps. And so it just kind of flows in that direction without the kind of usual self-consciousness that also often goes into acts of giving in our culture. So this idea of giving being a freely given thing, that's kind of a spontaneous act of freedom, expression of freedom, is a high ideal. And it's nice to know that it's an ideal that is our potential, something that we can, you know, we could have. And I suspect all of you probably have some experience of that kind of giving, even if it's very small. Giving to family, perhaps, or close friends. But in Buddhism, giving can also be a practice. And it's a kind of a valuable practice. And that means that one of the reasons to give in Buddhism is to give not because you're inspired to give, but because you have some idea that this is a valuable training for you or a valuable area for you to grow into. And there's a variety of ways we can grow from generosity. One is we can see how we're ungenerous. I don't think I want to. really? I'm afraid. If I give, then I won't have anything for myself. I give my cookies, and then I won't have anything to eat later. And I'll give to charity, I'll give support to a friend, I'll do this and that, and then there'll be no time for me. Afraid that if I'm generous to a stranger, that the next thing I'll know, the stranger is going to be kind of forcing himself onto me in a way that I feel uncomfortable. And so there's all kinds of inner attitudes, understandings, attachments, fears, ambitions, motivations that can become clear if we're mindful while we're practicing giving. And so you might choose to do some giving, acts of giving, that normally you wouldn't do, and maybe you're not particularly, inspired to do it even, but do it anyway as a way of studying yourself. Learn about yourself. What do you do? And a friend of mine who's a teacher has suggested that people carry with them $20, which is a significant amount of money for people, most people. And look around, spend your days looking for a stranger, someone you don't know, who you would like to give it to. And then you have this problem. What? That's it's one thing to give someone a dollar or two who's homeless or something, asking for money, but $20? I mean, then it's kind of, for some people, it's like, what? What goes on in your mind? What goes on in your heart? What goes on in your consideration of your relationship to the other person? What happens there? What do you learn about yourself in that process? It can be a great training to do, great thing to do. I was here at IMC one day, and an IMC person was just walking, I think during the walking, but it was a day-long retreat. And the person was out, decided to go for a walk in the neighborhood during the walking period. And there was an elderly man. As I understand it, I think he was walking a dog or something. Elderly man walking with an attendant because he was somehow quite elderly and a little bit feeble. And I think how the story was that the woman from here kind of stopped to pet the dog and talk to them in a friendly way. And the man then pulled out of his pocket $100 bill and said, "Here, I'd like to give this to you." And the woman was kind of like, "So what?" And the attendant said, "He does this from time to time. you know, this isn't, you know, basically this is fine, it's okay to do this, okay, accept it. So she came back and she came to see me. And, you know, because I was teaching this day long. And she told me the story. And she said, you know, I feel what feels best to do with this unexpected gift is to give it to you. So now I had it. So now I had the problem. And so it didn't feel, I wasn't at all interested. It didn't feel right somehow. It felt like, now it felt like really special money. A double given money like this. And so I can't keep this for myself. That's not appropriate. And I want to give it someplace else. So I carried it in my wallet for an embarrassing long period of time, waiting for the occasion where I could give it to someone. And then finally I had the occasion where, you know, I go to San Quentin once a year to visit a program there. And and there was a man there who'd been at San Quentin for, I don't know, back then, maybe 35, 40 years, so a long time. And he was getting ready to be up for parole again, but it's very hard to get parole for certain people, especially before the latest change in the laws. And so he needed a lawyer, but he had no money. So the person, Jacques Verdun, who's teaching the program, he was kind of a little bit fundraising to see if they could raise money for this somehow. So that's where the $100 went. And that felt nice. So for me, there was this $100 bill was kind of like my little, you know, my mirror to myself, where I got to look at myself and what I wanted to do, my thoughts, my fears, my concerns, also my reflections. You know, how did I think about people when I encountered them? And, you know, if someone came and asked me for, on the street, a homeless person for some money, for some food, I have $100 there. You know, do I give it to that person? And, you know, so I had to reflect and think, and where would be the, what do I do with this? So I got to see a lot about myself, my values, my thoughts, and all that. So it was a great exercise. So this is an example of the practice of giving for our own training, for our own practice, to own self-discovery, own movement towards freedom. The other reason to give, and sometimes to practice giving, is because it's really good for our social relationships. And sometimes the Buddha said that giving is a way of unifying friends. Giving is a way of bringing society into harmony with each other. And when there's conflict and anger, sometimes to give is one of the great things to do. And it, you might not feel generous, but sometimes it's helpful to give when we don't feel generous. And so to give, so sometimes when, you know, there's a lot of tension, it does a great thing to, in a kind, nice, friendly way, to give a small gift, because of how it shifts and changes the relationships. It's kind of hard to be kind of hold grudges if a gift is given. Especially, I've noticed that for myself. If I'm the one giving a gift, it does something to me where I see the other person in a little different way if I've offered something to them. It's hard to maintain the grudge. And then hopefully it changes them a little as well. Nice thing to do. And then it's also giving, when you do feel generous, supports the generosity. Generosity is a very wonderful quality of heart, wonderful quality of mind, that is closely connected to freedom, giving, offering, giving up. And so if you give when you feel generous, it helps support and strengthen generosity. It helps and support and strengthens these good qualities in your own heart. It's a great thing to do. With a hope that if you're a practitioner of the path to freedom, that the act of generosity supports the movement towards freedom, where we're letting go of our clinging and our holding and wanting things. Say, here, here. We're freeing ourselves up in that act. But without harming ourselves. So if you're giving blindly, if you're giving out of obligation, out of duty, if you're giving out of fear, then perhaps it doesn't really free your heart in the giving. And so as a form of Buddhist practice, it doesn't really support that practice of the path to freedom. So, freedom, generosity, goodwill, and gratitude. These are beautiful qualities that I think live and come with the freely kind of given culture of that the Dharma is trying to encourage. Finally, because the word, the idea of generosity can be kind of heavy for some people and we're very narrow in what people think. There's a list of things you can be generous, things you can be generous with. You can be generous with material goods, like, you know, food and money and different things to support people and help, kind of conventional gifts. You can be generous with your kindness. And then there's a list of the kinds of kindness you can be generous with. You can be generous with kind smiles. You can be generous with kind eyes. You can be generous with a kind face. You can be generous with kind actions. You can be generous with kind words. You can be generous with, maybe that's enough, just, I don't know, just, you know, kind of, you know, so generosity doesn't have to be things, but it can be very simple, you know, very simple. There's a generosity of being receptive. So being a good listener to other people is an act of generosity. So listening or being receptive or being with people who are having challenges in their lives and offering your presence and being with that. So the generosity of being receptive or being present. There is a wonderful form of generosity called the giving of fearlessness. A lot of people in our society have fear. They have good cause for fear. There's a lot of danger and people experience, a lot of people have experienced harm done to them in all kinds of different ways. People live in communities where it's dangerous to be or where it's frightening to be and have had difficult experiences. But to help create a safer world for everyone is a tremendous gift that supports other people, helps other people grow and develop and experience well-being and happiness. So to give the gift of harmlessness, the gift of safety, the gift of fearlessness, helping them become fearless, at least helping them become fearless of you. You know, so they don't have to be afraid of you. What a great thing. You can't necessarily help what's going on everywhere, but at least you're a person who is doesn't evoke fear. And the final form of generosity that's in this list is the gift of the Dharma. So the Dharma here perhaps meaning the gift of the practices and teachings that really support our inner life to blossom and grow and develop into this unselfconscious, open freedom where giving and the receiver drop away. And there's this flow of wisdom, freedom, love that can flow between us and other people. The gift of the Dharma is the gift of practices and teachings that support that. So those are my thoughts about generosity. And since we have a wonderful Ajahn as a guest, I wonder if you'd like to say any words about generosity or experiences of generosity you have. But if you do, you're going to have to put this mic on your ear. Oh, yeah. Otherwise, they can't hear you.
I'll just hold it like this.
Slightly to the side, otherwise you blow on it.
Okay. Yes, so I guess on the theme of generosity, living as a Buddhist monk, you are always supported by generosity, and especially when one's doing what I've been doing for the last couple weeks, we call it tudong or walkabout. And basically you leave the monastery with just the bare essentials, bowl and robes, and some kind of a tent or something. And doing it in a place like America, you really, you get to witness so many acts of like random generosity, whether it's just, as Gil was saying, like friendly smiles or friendly waves or people just coming up to you just to shake your hand. And there's something like uplifting in that, which lightens the mind. And then, of course, just being supported with the physical requisites. As a Buddhist monk, I don't carry any money, and I've got loads of rules about food and storing food, and actually not storing food, and whatnot. So it's quite we're quite limited. So we really do depend on the day-to-day survival. You know, standing outside of grocery stores or being fed by people if you've been invited into their home or something. I guess I'm witnessing that and have witnessed that over 10 years now, and it's a beautiful thing. And also, I think being a monk and seeing how you affect other people who don't really know too much about Buddhism or monastic life, it's kind of, that's a service in just like representing the Sangha. But also in the monasteries, we do lots of work, like physical work, just to keep the place, you know, functioning and inspiring. If monasteries are dirty and not well kept, then the people who are supporting the monastery and, you know, with their funds and their time, they'll be, you know, they won't be inspired. They'll be like, these monks are just kind of hanging out, not looking after the place. So in a sense, it's our like duty to look after the requisites that we receive, whether it's our robes or whether it's buildings, land, you know, the food. And so that's a way that as a monk, we're also, you know, offering kind of dana, and that would be in the service of upkeeping the monasteries. And then, as Gil said too, the dana of practice, just practicing to free yourself from greed, hatred, and delusion. You're just taking that much greed, hatred, and delusion out of the world, and offering harmlessness wherever you go. So I usually don't get put on the spot like this, but as Tom would say, it's time for Q&A.
So if any of you have any comments on this theme, or if you have any questions for either the Ajahn or myself, he said, you know, he's suddenly on the spot, how challenging, right? But he comes out of a Buddhist tradition where you're not supposed to prepare for your talks anyway. So we can't feel too sorry for him.
Ongoing theme with the tongue.
Oh, it's that was very nice what you said. Thank you. So, anybody would like to ask any? Yes, please. If you can use the mic, please.
Thank you for the talk. I guess I have a relational question around generosity, which is, what happens when we have the desire in some ways to naturally give or generate generosity, but on the other end of it, there's a sort of, from the other party, there's an expectancy around generosity. And in such a way that while it might have started feeling good to be generous, to offer kindness and love and compassion in a myriad of ways, on the receiving end has been an expectancy of you to generate that. And I guess in the same light, I remember when I went to a talk once, the teacher said that you need to, she was talking about Dana, the Dana-based giving, and she said, you have to look at the mind of the giver at the time of giving. And what it made me think about was how, like, one could start, like, a relationship or some kind of relational, you know, yeah, say a romantic or whatever relationship, feeling like generosity is there and good and healthy, but then realizing as time goes on that it's being abused or misused. And I guess what I'm wondering is, like, is it okay then, like, should we stop being generous, or do we need to be selective in our generosity? And then what happens when that's not our natural inclination, which is to turn that back? What does one do?
Well, I suppose it's easy answer. If the instructions are to give where you're inspired or where there's joy, and if there's no more joy for you, then it can't be generous anymore. I think the gray area is where you still have some inspiration to give. It brings you some joy, but it's a little more complicated now. And is it really received properly? And so you're kind of unsure what to do about the inspired generosity with given what's going to happen to the recipient. So what do you think some of the options are?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
No, I think it's... is this working?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. No, I think what you said in terms of... I think what you said in terms of returning to the question of joy is one that I think gets lost, at least for myself. But I remember one of my favorite books is How to Love by Thich Nhat Hanh, and he talks about how if joy is not there, then that's not true love. And, you know, if compassion is not there, then that's not true love. Or if there's crying all the time, that's not true love. And so kind of returning to that question of if that's constantly what's grounding us in the question of generosity or giving or compassion, then it's easier in that way, you know? So I think the options, I don't know about the options, but I think the option of returning to those questions of discernment is a core thing.
Yeah, and then also to use all of this to look at yourself more deeply. Someone who you give something to someone, and they receive it grudgingly, you know, or they say, oh, you know, that's all you can give? Oh, you know, you're pretty, you know, that was pretty miserly of you. And you thought you were inspired and you would want to do, but they're kind of like angry at you now. Mm-hmm. They might be giving you a gift in return, not knowing it. And the gift is you get to look at your generosity to see if you really give without caring what they thought. And it might be possible to find, oh yeah, my giving is so good, independent of their reaction. And so that frees you from that kind of living, you know, dependent on what other people think and feel and react. And that might be a great learning experience, great freeing experience. The other is that we need some wisdom in it. And sometimes in relationships, there are dysfunctionalities and codependency issues that come into play. And so the giving comes with expectations, dependencies, all kinds of things go on. And so sometimes it's not a healthy situation, and wisdom hopefully reveals that to you. And my idea of a healthy relationship is one where it's possible to talk honestly about what's going on. We can expect all kinds of funny things to happen in relationships. So that's just expected. but then to have a relationship, you can put it all on the table and talk about it and work it out. So say, you know, my generosity is a little more complicated now because of seems like it's gotten tied up in our expectations, our dependency, and can we sit down and talk about it? Might have time for one more. Someone has something? Take them there.
So the issue of the generosity of a kind smile or willingness to engage thinking about work environments where there's tension or hostility between coworkers, and a certain amount of history. You know, well, this happened a month ago, or this happened a week ago, and now it's like this. And on a chance moment, seeing somebody, and there's that person that I'm having that conflict with, or where it's really uncomfortable, but this is just a surprising occurrence that happened, and we're fresh and new, and we just happen to be generously responding to each other with a smile. It's freeing, and at the same time, I look at myself, and what comes up for myself is, what's going to happen now?
Meaning, what trouble are you going to get into now?
yeah, that too. History of, I thought things were better, and whammo, you know, it's not that much better, or I get hammered again, or, and that's kind of rough language, sorry, I get surprised at something again, or is there an opening here to, I don't know, either subtly or not too subtly, lubricate the wheels of work, I don't know, I'm going on and on, but the workplace and the generosity of just something like a smile, when you were talking about that, that really intrigued me. And can one take it too far, or should one just be happy with that there was that?
I think generosity or basic friendliness of other people can go a long way. But here, this is what occurs to me as an answer to you. So maybe it seems like a non sequitur or not so connected, but maybe I can make the connection. When I was a Zen student in the monastery, when we were sitting and meditating, they would come around, the teachers would come around sometimes and correct your posture, adjust your posture. And that was a common thing. And, you know, I was often leaning, you know, to one side or when meditating. And so they'd come over and they'd correct me in some ways or straighten me up because I was slouching or something. And it happened often enough that I had, a real experience of, what it was like to have this happen. And what I noticed after a while was that if I was distracted, I was thinking during my meditation, lost in thought. The way they would come and adjust your posture, they'd come up from behind you and very gently put their hand on your shoulder. It's very soft, kind of, usually, I think, a kind feeling. Just gently put, so you know they were there, and you knew that what it meant, the shoulder, the hand, and then, they're going to be straightened out. So if I was lost in thought, and I didn't know they were walking behind me or behind, and they touched me, I would startle. But if I was really present and not lost in thought, kind of mind was kind of quiet and open and present, I still might not notice that they were walking behind me until they touched my shoulder. But when they touched my shoulder, my body was so receptive and soft, I would just kind of go along with it, kind of like putty, kind of like, just okay, no problem. So that answer in connection to what you said is that people will do all kinds of funny behavior in this world, including at your work. The way that, that could be difficult, challenging, and all that. They can be mean, they can be angry, and all these things. But perhaps how you are when you encounter someone who's hostile or being difficult has a lot to do with how you respond. And if you're equivalent with my lost in thought, if you're that it can meet something difficult in you, and it can be startled or challenging. But if you're present in a very full, relaxed, settled way, and their hostility meets you in that space, it's just fluid. It just goes right through, or it doesn't really discombobulate you or affect you in some strong way. And then you're probably much more better able to smile and saying, "Oh, are you having a hard time today?" Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Good. Great. So thank you for today and for coming and practicing here. And I think it's always a wonderful gift whenever we come together as a group. that we're supporting each other in the practice that we're doing and meditating. And so you might not have realized this, but your presence here today was a gift to everyone else. And so for that, I thank you.